own security. Tim Haggerty with the security, and it's like on call. Like they listen to the broadcast. There's anything, you know, like an anchored to the booth incident, if you know, you know. They're gonna have his back, and they're gonna help him out.
They are.
I love that. That's a great story. I didn't know that. I knew you were on the broadcast. I sent you a text yesterday when you were on the broadcast, but I did not know that's how it all wrapped up.
Oh, it did. It was fantastic. It really was. It was great. And listen to this. We were like watching the game yesterday from a suite. My brother ended up getting, he came into some suite tickets, so he offered them to us and some other people. And one of the guys in the suite caught a ball yesterday.
Wow. So it was a big day at the
ballpark. Big day. Yeah, big day. And the best was, this is my favorite part of the broadcast. I talked about how my son, who's now 11, is with his buddies. You know, they're all his two twin cousins who are 9 months older. One of his other good buddies, actually about everybody that he's friends with. I mean, they're all from the baseball team. So there, yesterday was youth baseball night. I would say there was about, you know, six, seven kids. They all disappear. They're like, hey, we're going to go, you know, go do something. And it's like, all right. And then I didn't know where they were. So I even said on the broadcast, you know, a couple of innings ago, the kids disappeared and I have no idea where they are right now. And the camera crew and the video team somehow knew my son face-wise where they found him in the suite, zeroed in on him. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like, think about this for a second on a TV broadcast, the TV crew. I mean, that is how good the Chihuahuas video team is. It also tells me that I've been taking my son everywhere for the last decade plus to where everybody knows him. Forget me. They all know him. So, like, you've got a ballpark full, you know, there's fans there last night. And somehow they spotted him and zeroed in on him. And I'm like, you know what, guys, thank you. I knew he was safe, but now just show me that there he is. Because they didn't know what suite he was or that he was even a suite. They didn't know. They found him. They found him in a crowd of people last night and put him on the video cast for me. How great is that?
That is such a great story. Star of the show, Steve. We could call it there. Yes. And I'm happy. I mean, I saw him. He was rocking the awesome Acuña necklace.
He's got the Acuña necklace, and he's got his margarita ball cap.
Yeah, I love that hat. I was just going to compliment that hat because, I mean, he looked like he was ready to go. He looked like he was ready for some baseball. And, yeah, man, I'm happy that he made the Jumbotron yesterday.
I'm a little worried, though, because he's getting to that age now where, you remember when, like, anytime he'd come to the radio station, he always wanted to sit in a chair in the studio and put on the headphones and listen and then get on the mic and do that. Last night, he comes in here at about 6:15 and goes, hey, Dad, I'm just going to hang in your office.
Wow, man.
I'm like, it's starting. It is already started. Like, the lore of being, in the studio with us during the show, like, you know, it doesn't have the same appeal anymore. It just doesn't. You know, he's almost 12 years old, and now he's got a life, and he's got friends, and he also has a smartphone, which is probably the worst thing that I could have ever done. But it's the reality of the situation. So he's got his phone where he can text his buddies and check out YouTube and none of the other social media accounts. I locked those out. But
good,
I mean,
yeah.
But the point is, yeah, he's got a life. So anyway, that's what I'm dealing with.
I guarantee you, it'll swing back. He's going to start, I bet you 14, you know, 13, 14, he's going to start pitching ideas to you like, hey, I want to do a segment about this. I've always thought about this because, you know, he feels like he could get a platform. He's always had a platform on this show.
It's great
to check in with him from time to time, just kind of get the progress report from Joel Kaplowitz as well whenever he jumps on the show with us. So I'll say this, like, I think it's going to swing back. The lure is going to be gone for a little bit, but it'll swing back.
I'll tell you this much. Today is a special day for us. It's a day for us to remember. My dad passed away 20 years ago on this day. So Joel Kaplowitz, known as Papa Joel to a lot of you here today, he died May 1st, 2004. And to me, it's crazy that it's been 20 years. I put it on Twitter and X earlier today. I found some photos that I scanned, and I hadn't ever put those out on social, but I put those up there. And obviously, we named our son after my dad. And today's one of those days where I just feels like it was yesterday. Like he was still here. He was calling the show. He was around Time Warner at the time before Spectrum. He was doing a show with Wayne. He did high school sports. He did our show. He did Football Friday Night. He did Buzzards Hockey. He was in the penalty box operating that and at all the UTEP games. And it's just, I don't know, it's kind of a surreal experience for us. It really is when we realize that today is 20 years. And, talking about my son and, again, thinking about his grandpa and everything else, it really kind of, brings it close to home today. It really does. So, again, a lot of you have been kind enough to post on social for me. I appreciate that. And for those of you that knew him, I feel the same way as all of you. And just, again, tough is the best way to put it, that he's been gone 20 years. But nonetheless, we do have a lot to talk about on the show today. I know he would not be happy if he was alive today. I would have gotten a call at about 9 o'clock last night from a very angry, upset Knicks fan wondering how they – I wouldn't even be able to repeat the words that he would have used in that phone call with me last night. But I've heard those calls before. I really have. And the truth is, while I was at the Chihuahuas game last night, I thought the Knicks had it in hand. Chad Middleton was keeping me abreast via text. And then I just decided, all right, let me put it on my Spectrum app and watch the end of this game. And, oh, my God, it was brutal. I mean, but then I started looking at it in a different way, okay? The Knicks stole game two, right? They had no business winning game two. They were down 5 with 20 seconds left, and they should have lost that game. And they should have lost that game, no doubt about it. They stole it. They won. Last night, the Sixers had no business winning that game. They were down 6, 30 seconds left. Who would be dumb enough to foul on a 3-point shot that goes in? It happened last night. It was the perfect storm. The Tyrese Maxey show. He did the impossible, which was, tie the game single-handedly. This wasn't a Joel Embiid, domination. This was Tyrese Maxey who dropped 40-plus on the Knicks last night. And the Knicks lost a game that they absolutely had no business losing, just like the Sixers in game two. Now, the easy answer is we're even. They both have found ways to blow a game that they shouldn't have, right? So if the Sixers win game two and the Knicks win game 5, it's a 3-2 lead going back to Philadelphia, which is exactly the way it is. My concern is that the Knicks, can they recover from this? I mean, you're going back to Philly. I don't think it's going to be an all-New York crowd. I think it's going to be the Sixers are going to show up in force tomorrow night, trying to force a game 7 on Saturday. And I'm a big believer that when you've got a team on the ropes and you keep them alive, that's the worst thing you could possibly do. So we'll see what this Knicks team is made of now that they absolutely, and yep, you hate to use the C word, but there's no other way to do it. They choked that game away last night like no one's choked it before. And now, Adrian, they're going to have to try to come back and win the series on the road in Philadelphia. Or, worst case, in a game 7 Saturday at the Garden.
I was concerned with Joel Embiid in these postseason games, but it's really Tyrese Maxey who stepped up, and he's the mayor of Philadelphia today, at least for a day, for what he was able to do. I can't believe the images of the celebrities courtside out at Madison Square Garden, Tracy Morgan giving him the finger, Ben Stiller, like people on social media are saying, seething and so upset about it. You also saw Jon Stewart out there just so utterly disappointed.
Yep.
It was funny, like comical right there. But at the same time, I'm not concerned. It took a 50-point Joel Embiid game to win one game for Philly. And then this game, it's 47 by Maxey. I feel like those two have to be superstars in a single game in order to win. I've got the Knicks winning this next matchup in 6.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what this team is made
of. Cautiously optimistic.
If they blow a 3-1 lead and lose this series, we'll never hear the end of it, Neil.
Oh, no.
We'll never hear the end of it.
Hey, by the way, behind the scenes, a lot of rumors are swirling about Devin Booker to the Knicks next offseason. I'm like, all right, wait. Front office for the Knicks, worry about now. You're still in the playoffs. You're still in the postseason.
Interesting.
Free agency will come up in the summer.
Very interesting. All right. We'll talk more hoops later in the show. Meantime, up next, Jay Jaffe, beer, baseball. They go together. We'll do it right here after Charlie won and our first traffic update of our Wednesday afternoon. Love this. And by the way, if you would have asked me last year, Matt Waldron had a chance to even make the rotation, I would have said, nope. He was getting hit around like a pinball in AAA. But man, oh man, he's settling in nicely in that San Diego rotation so far.
Yeah, you know, I've been following the plight of the disappearing knuckleballer for pretty much the entirety of my time at Fangraphs. I wrote about when Ryan Firebend came back from the KBO and had a couple of outings back in 2019, and since then bemoaned the disappearance of the pitch at the top level. And so, when one of our prospect people alerted me to the possibility of Waldron at least toying around with the knuckleball in the minor leagues, it caught my attention, and I was pleasantly surprised, given that his numbers were so rough, that he even got a look last year.
Yep.
I wrote about his debut last, I think it was June 23rd, and was delighted to see him come up later in the year, and now it's been really great to see that he's had, you know, enough success to stick around in the majors and make a go of it. I don't think he's going to win a Cy Young Award anytime soon, but he's out pitching Joe Musgrove and Michael King in the Padres rotation. And, I think adding to his own credibility here with every start.
That's what impresses me so much about him, is that I kept waiting for the novelty to wear off a little bit and MLB hitters to start catching up to him, but really hasn't been the case. And it's crazy enough to say that he's pitched better with the Padres than he did with the Chihuahuas.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things to remember about pitching at El Paso and within the Pacific Coast League is high altitude is a factor. The ball doesn't move as much at high altitude, and you got a lot of places on that circuit that are pretty high, not only El Paso, but also Albuquerque and Colorado Springs, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas. I think he's better off in the major leagues, although this year he's got a very odd home-road split where he hasn't pitched well at San Diego, which is right at sea level. But that, I think, is a sample size issue. And I think it's also the quality of the catching is better at the major leagues. The quality of the coaching is better. I think one real key for him is he's actually got a pretty good sweeper going. Mm-hmm. The pitch modeling says that's his best pitch besides the knuckleball. The pitch models don't rate the knuckleball because they don't really have anything to compare it to in the age of analytics. There's not enough data. But his sweeper is a very good pitch, and that, and he's got good command, and so that keeps him a very playable back of the rotation starter.
Sure does. By the way, I saw that you had a chat here yesterday, and in the chat you said knuckling down, not knuckling under. Was that a little kind of a little foreshadowing tease for your readers about what could be coming up?
Yeah, I'd been working on the Waldron piece for a couple of days. I'd sort of after his really strong start at Colorado last week, I had sort of earmarked him and I watched his start, and it was interrupted by having to write a preliminary write up of that double no hit game that was in progress, because if one of those had materialized, I would have turned my attention to that. So.
Yeah.
But as it was, that didn't come to pass, and so we just figured it would be better to hold the Waldron piece for another day. And as like you said, it got the feature spot on the front page today, and it's a fun piece. I'm if he makes it to New York here, I will go see him pitch against the Mets or whatever, and maybe get to interview him.
Meanwhile, you also wrote earlier about the crowd below replacement level, talking about players that are underperforming right now compared to a replacement level player. Paul Goldschmidt was the name you brought up to put in the story, but Nick Castellanos, Gleyber Torres, and others are also a part of this. There are some very good ball players that are still struggling out of the gate after the month of April.
Yeah, it happens every year, and you know, especially at the 1 month mark, it's a good time to look and see, you know, what's going wrong for these guys. Is it fatal, so to speak? You know, I mean, with Goldschmidt, he'd been one I was keeping an eye on, and at his age, 36 years old, you wonder, okay, is this really the beginning of the end? And boy, every indicator that I looked at is just not good. A lot of signs of not hitting the ball hard and just not swinging as hard and aging, and it's just. It's grim, but some of the other guys we mentioned, like Gleyber Torres and Nick Castellanos, are considerably younger and shouldn't be falling apart at this point, but they've got their issues. Randy Arozarena, for example, one of the players that I included in the article, his production is down because he's been trying to use the whole field, and it's compromised his power and the quality of his contact, and so... you know, he's going to have to make some adjustments. And so, you know, sometimes the explanations are different for each player, but that was the goal of the piece, was to look into what was going on.
You didn't mention, and you easily could have mentioned, in this piece at Fangraphs, Jose Abreu. And it's a fascinating story, Jay. It really is, because 2 years ago, he batted .304 with 15 home runs, 75 RBIs, goes from Chicago to the White Sox to the Astros, started slow last year. I'll give him that. He started slow, but he picked it up in the second half of the season, finished with a .237 average, 18 home runs, 90 RBIs. But look at Jose Abreu this season in 22 games. He's batting .099, no home runs, 3 RBIs, was sent down, and basically the Astros have had enough. He's 37 years of age. When was the last time you saw a player whose decline was so steep like this out of the gate?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, but I will say that, you know, Abreu did have to approve of the decision to go down to the minors because of how much major league service time he has. So this was him doing something, you know, good for the team, because
yes,
most players would not have agreed to that. They have their pride. But yeah, Abreu dug himself a really big hole last year and worked hard to get out of it, but had some injury problems late in the year. I just think this guy's body is older than 37 here, so to speak, and age is catching up to him. And you know, I think that was the concern when the Astros signed him to a 3-year deal, that he wouldn't age well. And he's just fallen apart. It's sobering to see. I'm trying to think of an example here of just how somebody plummeting that precipitously. And it's just Chris Davis, maybe. You know, he had a couple of mediocre seasons before going for that 0-for-50, whatever it was. You know, Abreu's, it's tough to watch, and I hope for his sake that he can turn it around, but he's got a lot of work to do.
Yes, he does. More with Jay as we keep things moving. Bottom of the hour, we'll get his thoughts on the latest Trout injury, Grayson Rodriguez to the IL, and a whole lot more. But first, let's send it back to Adrian. He's standing by with this SportsCenter update. Back right now with Jay Jaffe from Fangraphs.com. His latest profile on Matt Waldron is up on the website. Check that out. And his chat story about crowd below replacement level players and everything else as we continue. All right, Mike Trout, going to be out probably at least a month, maybe 6 weeks with knee surgery. He calls it frustrating. You know, Let's look at it like this. I still think Trout has years left before he decides to hang it up. But, Jay, he was on a pace before he hit the IL for the first time in his career that we're like, this guy is going to break every record there is. And now it's so sad that we could look at perhaps two careers, pre-injury, post-injury, and we'll just be left thinking, what if? Mike Trout doesn't get hurt and spend the second half of his career always on the IL.
Yeah, it's frustrating because, I mean, look, he was leading the majors or tied for the major league lead in home runs, although his batting just .220 and second lowest OPS plus of his career. So it's not all good news in his offensive profile, but yeah, it's frustrating. He's only played more than 100 games just once in the past four seasons. Obviously, the pandemic shortened 2020, but 36 games in 21, 119 in 22, 82 last year. He's been very good when he's played, but he just hasn't been able to stay on the field. And sometimes it's a freak injury. Sometimes it's tissue, and it's tough to watch. But I feel for the guy. I mean, look, he's set for life. He's not going to go hungry. He's signed through 2030. But we are missing out by not getting to see him, and it's just you got to understand how frustrating it must be for him because. This is a guy who takes his job very seriously, who takes his conditioning very seriously, but he's age is getting to his joints, and he's maybe sometimes playing through pain that he shouldn't be playing through, and he's just not exactly the fastest healer. We see that a lot here in New York with Aaron Judge as well. It's just you want these guys to come back. You want them to come back strong, and it takes a while to get there. I'm hopeful that. This is just something that he can get through pretty quickly and come back and pick up where he left off, maybe even better, and get most of a full season in.
Could you ever see a potential move to either the DH or the first base spot just to try to limit his body and what's happened with him just playing the outfield position?
I don't know that the DH actually keeps you that much healthier, to be honest with you, because you're sitting for a couple innings at a time and getting up, and it's tougher to stay warm in that. I know that a lot of DHs go into the clubhouse and ride a stationary bike or do stuff like that. DHing regularly has not helped some guys. Giancarlo Stanton comes to mind. When your body's breaking down, it's just there's not a whole lot you can do other than try to work on different ways of increasing your flexibility and things like that. I don't know that DHing is the answer for him, and I think that he's somebody who likes to be engaged in the game, who takes great pride in his defense, even though his metrics have kind of slipped a bit. I don't know what the answer is.
By the way, I know he didn't have quite the start to his career like Mike Trout, but we found out today that Byron Buxton left today's game against the White Sox in the second inning because of right knee soreness after an unsuccessful attempt to steal second base. There's another guy that you'll look at and say, man, oh man, he just has such a hard time staying healthy. And, you could probably play the what-if game with Byron Buxton too had he had the opportunity to not get hurt so much early in his career.
Yeah, the thing about Buxton is we've never really gotten very long to see what he can do. It's a few months here and there. Mike Trout is a guy who's going to go to the Hall of Fame even if he never plays another game again. I mean, he's got three MVP awards, the Rookie of the Year award. His credentials are pretty full. Buxton, what's really sad is we just can't see him sustain his ability to stay on the field. And I'm reading about Buxton here, and apparently there was an incident involving the umpire Rob Drake telling him to get off the field as well, which is going to blow this up into something that it probably shouldn't be.
Yep, that's true. All right, what do you have coming up for us as far as Fangraphs this week?
I'm going to check in on early season home run rates here. This piece is for tomorrow. Home run rates are down by about 15% relative to last year's overall rate, and by about 10%, 9% I think it is, relative to last year's March and April rate. So we're going to take a look at what's going on there.
Good. By the way, one really good storyline for you. I don't know if anybody's touched on this on Fangraphs, but I was just noticing this today as I was looking it up at some box scores. Joe Adele is hitting almost 300. He's got 4 home runs, 11 RBIs. The Angels are terrible, but after the injury to Trout, you know, he's one of the few bright spots on this team and maybe a great example that sometimes patience does pay off, since they were ready to call him the next great thing at the age of 20, and after failure, they didn't give up on him. Now he's 25, and maybe Joe Adele is finally getting a chance to come into his own with the Angels.
Yeah, somebody asked about him in my chat yesterday, and I noted that it's only about 60 plate appearances. He's up to 63 now. But this is the most sustained success we've seen for him at the major league level. So yeah, let's hope it's the start of something. If he does keep this up, I'll definitely be taking a look here in the next few weeks.
Excellent. As far as our beers to profile, what's that going to be this week?
Okay, this was a good one here. From Grim Artisanal Ales here in New York, this is their Wave Table. It's a New England IPA, 6.7% ABV. Comes in, it's got Strata, Mosaic, and Citra hops. I get pineapple and mango and maybe a little bit of tangerine out of it. I thought this was a really nice, easy-drinking IPA. Going back for more.
I like the can. The can is really, really cool. It's like a black can, and then the design, it almost looks like, what is that, Jay? Is that like a snake?
I think it's a wave.
Is that just a wave? Okay.
Yeah, it's just a wave.
Different colors, though, which make it kind of fun. So Artisanal Ales Wave Table from Grimm. All right, excellent stuff. We'll talk to you next week. Appreciate the time, Jay.
Okay, thanks a lot, Steve.
All right. Should have known it was a wave. It says Wave Table on the beer. What am I doing? Asking if it's a snake. Hey, if you look up, here's the thing. You know, everybody tries to get so cute with their designs these days. Google Grimm Wave Table IPA, Adrian, and you'll understand why I asked Jay if that's a snake versus a wave. The easy answer is, yeah, it's a wave. But I looked at it, I go, I could kind of see that being like an artsy version of a snake, couldn't
100%.
You?
100%. Yeah, it could definitely be a snake. I get that. Yeah, definitely. It's actually not really, it doesn't really look like a wave.
No, but anyway, it's all right. I feel,
yeah. Alberto says it looks like a sled. That's very true.
Interesting, too. All right. 20 in front of 5. We got plenty more for you. We're here with you for almost 2 more hours. We'll take you up till 6:30, and then it's Chihuahuas baseball. All coming up with Tim Haggerty right here on your home for the Chihuahuas, 600 ESPN El Paso. And Sports Talk. When you talk about award winners, you talk about, you know, the Grammys, the Academies, but remember, Best of the City with El Paso Magazine, that's a great award. Best of the Best, El Paso Inc.'s a great award. And you know who wins those all the time? Paolo Verde Holmes. That's right. Paolo Verde Holmes is what it's all about. In fact, customization, the perfect house, the perfect floor plan, people on their staff that have engineering degrees, architectural degrees, people that, Adrian, the best way to put it, this group knows what they're doing. They build homes the right way, they build all around town, and they can build for you.
That's exactly right. And you talk about the different builds, Steve. How about the different home elevations that they offer at Paolo Verde Homes, like the Spanish, the Tuscan, the contemporary, and everybody's favorite, the farmhouse elevation. They've got great online reviews. You know why? Because they've been doing it here in El Paso for over 17 years. They opened up back in 2007, and they've been doing it ever since. So that's Paolo Verde Homes, the people that we trust here on Sports Talk.
You want to learn more and see those homes in action, you can do it online, paoloverdehome.com. As we continue here on the program, 505-6009, that is our telephone number, 505-6009. Eric, the number 4, Nier, thank you. Yeah, snake, I couldn't believe it either. When, you know, it was one of those things where, what can I tell you, the beer can, that was the first thing I saw. I saw a snake, not a wave, But, you know, maybe it's, as Alberto said, it's not a snake and it's not a wave. Maybe it's a sled. Maybe it's something completely different.
It's a multicolor sled, right?
Yeah. And by the way, it just goes to show you, beer can artwork is open for interpretation, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, hey, people have different thoughts and you know, as far as different art. I would say that this one is definitely unique. It doesn't look like a wave.
All right. Well, yeah, I still kind of screwed that one up. Hey, by the way, what is going on with the story you talked about during SportsCenter with Xavier Smith?
Yeah, this is crazy. Yeah, this is there's a lot to unpack here, Steve. There's a lot, right? Xavier Smith, who is a safety at UTEP, he played at Austin Peay last year. He came with the coaching staff and he came with all the squad to UTEP, and now he's a minor. He went to The Athletic. The Athletic interviewed him about this story about kind of like the exodus that Colorado saw last year. All those players that hit the portal. Remember that big story, like Coach Prime is here. He completely flipped the roster. Xavier Smith was basically claiming that Deion Sanders never tried to get to know him and that Deion Sanders was destroying guys' confidence and belief in themselves. Okay. Now, because he went to The Athletic obviously picked up a lot of traction off these tweets. Yep. And posts and the story itself. Well, the players weren't happy about it. I'm talking about the players on Colorado. Shedeur Sanders was saying he had no clue who this was, basically had to be mid. He called him mid as a player, Xavier Smith. And then Coach Sanders got involved too. Scotty Walden got involved. It's been all over social media. I'm not a fan of things like this. I'm a fan of, you know, obviously not necessarily going to the press and the media if you've got some grievances to air. But for Xavier Smith, it's his right to go off and talk about his experience. And if it was a poor experience at Colorado, he could go off and say stuff like that. But be prepared for the backlash like he faced today.
Meanwhile, isn't this kind of like the most exposure on social ever that a UTEP football player has had?
Yes.
When you start to think about it?
Yeah, I think so. For anything not related to football, yes. Unless it's and it's not related to any kind of crime or anything like that, yes. This is definitely one of the ones I could definitely remember here.
I mean, the thing is this, okay? The fact that he said that Deion Sanders never tried to get to know him and was destroying confidence and belief, I can believe that. I really can. I mean, look at the turnover of how many players he's gone through in the two seasons that he's been at Colorado. He just continues to, if you can't get it done, he's just going to get rid of you. That's just what it comes down to. So the fact that he's talking about stuff like this, you know, probably here's the deal. The kids being honest, most of the time, kids are not honest in the college level. They're afraid it could burn a bridge or something like that. But he must have had a pretty bad experience with Deion, and you know, he voiced his opinion out there. I mean, look, there could be players from UTEP going into the portal now that don't have good things to say about Scotty Walden, especially if they were told they're not going to play and they want to go someplace else. And you know, who knows? Maybe we'll start to see some of that backlash happen.
Right. I mean, this is one of those things that it's college football, right? And it's also a sport where you're not playing right now and everybody's living on social media. Everybody's on Twitter. Everybody's excited about the upcoming season. So that's where you get kind of all this right here. I think that's why this was blown up to a high level. The fact that Deion Sanders today, he started tweeting different things like, mm-hmm. you know, he started quote tweeting guys and said, Lord Jesus in one of his tweets, LAWD. So there you go.
Meanwhile, the story that everybody's talking about in The Athletic that was written by Max Olson a couple of days ago, here's the title. What happened to Deion Sanders' Colorado castoffs? Revisiting a record-setting exodus. What does that sound like? Does that sound like a positive story? Of course not. Just listen to the title. So, yeah. And, you know, Shadur is going to come to his dad's defense. Deion's going to talk trash because he's talked trash his entire career and he's not going to stop now
as a
head coach. Yeah, exactly right. No, he's not Deion. He's Coach Prime.
That's right. He's Coach Prime, correct.
I'm amazed he even mentioned Deion in the story. I didn't just call him Coach Prime.
Correct. I mean, you know, I would also say this. Deion joining or starting his own program, Coach Prime with his own program at Colorado, it's his right to do a roster takeover roster overhaul, just like it's Scotty Walden's right to do that here at UTEP. So, yeah, I think both things can be true there.
I'm with you on that one. There were 53 players. I mean, that's a huge list when you really start to think about it. So we'll come back. We got plenty more coming up. Jeff Erickson, 25 minutes away to talk some fantasy baseball and your phone calls as well. Plus, we'll get his fantasy thoughts on the NFL draft. A lot of good conversation still to come. 600 ESPN El Paso. A terrific beat to it. Always has. Plus, I it brings me back to my childhood, remembering when this song first came out and how popular it was and it was getting radio airplay from the great Stevie Wonder. We got a lot to cover in our second hour. Jeff Erickson's going to join us here in a little bit. If you've got a fantasy question, whether it's fantasy football, fantasy baseball, fantasy anything, send it to us right now. 600 ESPN El Paso on Twitter and X, the free mobile app, where you can listen to the show and chat with us in real time.
Thank you to all the people who listened to us on the app. Saw the numbers recently.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Really, really cool.
A lot of people listen to us on the app. Really appreciate that.
I mean, honestly, I don't blame them. When you listen on the app, especially if it's in your car, you feel like you're in the studio with us. It's the greatest listening experience you can possibly have.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I mean, we don't talk numbers a lot, but it's really encouraging to see a lot of people who listen to us on a weekly basis use our 600 ESPN El Paso mobile app, the crystal clear quality. You can read all the articles. You can call in directly off the app. So many great features with our 600 ESPN El Paso mobile app.
If you have not downloaded it, do it today, and you'll see everything that it comes with. And yep, it is free, it is fun, and it is extremely interactive, which is what it's all about. All right. Also, want to let you know Dining Deals is coming up this Friday at 10 a.m., and we've got a chance for you to go and get $50 for $25 at the joint, the pizza joint. That's right. Three locations in El Paso. In fact, if you have not had the opportunity to go either to their main location, which is 2900 North Mesa, Suite F. But that's not the only one, Adrian. They're also, you know, they've got the location out on West Wind and Belvedere, and they've got a spot downtown as well.
Yeah, I love the UTEP location, the one right by the university, because that's like, that reminds me of when they first opened up and when my friends and I were first going to Pizza Joint. We were going out there. I always get the Louisiana hot sauce that they have for you just ready to go, because for some reason that matches up so well with Pizza Joint pizza. So yes, downtown location's excellent because you could plan either before or after the ball game. You could go out to Pizza Joint or just for lunch or dinner. You know, it's a great spot as well. And then the West Wind is the one closer to my house, so I'm always out there, frequent out there. Love Pizza Joint.
Yeah, that makes two of us. So and I'm sorry, three with Alberto. I'm sure he does as well. So hey, we appreciate that. 505-6009, our telephone number. That's 505-6009. If you would like to get into the program, now is the time to do it. Since we're with you for another 90 minutes, and we'll take you up till 6:30, then it's Tim Haggerty who will have the call for Chihuahuas and the Space Cowboys. Was there last night at the ballpark. A lot of fun, and it's going to continue through Sunday, and that's also something very cool to talk about. We were talking about the Knicks earlier because of their loss last night to Philly, but we should also mention there were two other games played last night. How about the Cavs beating the Magic 104-103 just hours after Dave DeFore predicted the Magic to win this series over Cleveland?
Yeah, maybe they still can. I think this one will go to seven. It's just very back and forth. Paolo Banchero had two opportunities late in the game with two different possessions to win it. Missed two three-pointers, and then as a result, you know, the Cavs capitalized on it. Evan Mobley had a crucial bucket down low, and then he had a crucial block against I think it was Franz Wagner. So I really, you know, it's a weird series. There's no stars in this series on both sides. Donovan Mitchell, he's like the ready and built for the moment, but he's not that good in these late games right now. I don't know if it's the supporting cast around him, but he's not making the late shots like he used to. It's like he's not necessarily Damian Lillard in these playoffs, so to speak. So not surprised that this one's kind of back and forth, and I expect the Magic to win this game six, force a game seven.
Were you surprised about how Milwaukee beat up on the Pacers? They played terrific defense. I think that was the key. Nobody was able to get really into a groove from Indiana. big second quarter, big third quarter, and before you know it, they just blew that game wide open. And I got to give credit to Milwaukee's shorthanded starting five. They all played well. They all did. I mean, you know, you look at Bobby Portis and Chris Middleton, along with Beasley and Beverly. This team got it done without Giannis. And now, if you're Indiana, you have to win game six at home. Because I'll tell you right now, it's kind of like the difference between this and the Knicks is that if the Knicks lose game six, it goes back to the Garden for game seven. If the Pacers lose game six, it goes back to Milwaukee for game seven, and then Indiana's going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I think Dave DeFore hit it real well, hit it right on the head about Indiana. Just not a kind of a sloppy team, not necessarily the best scoring offensively. Like, Tyrese Halliburton's their best player, and he was 6 of 14 yesterday and struggled. But he hasn't really been able to adjust now that defenses have adjusted to him. He started off the season at an all-NBA level, one of the best guards to start off the year. And after the All-Star break, he kind of tailed off a little bit. So Tyrese Halliburton, I want to see him step up. I put a lot on him for that loss. I think he needed to be big in this one, and he just simply wasn't. Give credit to the Bucks for stepping up and dominating that game. The game wasn't close at all. I mean, they controlled it for pretty much four quarters.
We have the TNT doubleheader tonight with the Heat-Celtics in about 30 minutes. Actually, 20 minutes from now, that gets going. Boston can close this one out if they win at home. And then you've got what to me is one of the more fascinating series. The Clippers and Mavericks are tied at two. They're at Crypto tonight, but no Kawhi. And Adrian, without Kawhi Leonard, does Dallas suddenly have the advantage, even though they're on the road, to take that 3-2 lead tonight and try to close it out in Big D?
Previously, I'd say yes, of course. It's the easy answer. Of course they're going to win, and of course they're going to have success. But then the Clippers just won without Kawhi, and it was James Harden taking over, and it was Paul George hitting big shot after big shot in late-game situations. You mentioned injuries. I think there's an injury going on with Luka Doncic right now, and he's it's his knee. He's not running like he typically does. He was a little bit out of it in the Sunday game. Maybe he steps it up. Maybe they win tonight. This is just a back-and-forth series. This one feels like it'll go to seven either way, and Kawhi, to predict what he's going to do or if he's going to be available is just wrong. Like, I don't know. I don't think the Clippers even know his injury status, and that's the kind of the mysterious type of player that Kawhi Leonard has always been. He never really leads it to the team doctors on how healthy he actually is, or maybe not.
Well, the funny thing is that without Kawhi, you go with this three-guard rotation of Harden, Mann, and I believe Coffee is the third, right? And
Amir Coffee, yeah.
And it's a weird rotation, but they got it done because, like you said, they've got a couple of alphas on that team that can step up that have done this a few times in their careers.
I'll tell you this. The one guy who could hurt them in tonight's game is Russell Westbrook. Shout out to Sal. Sal Montes is our resident Russell Westbrook, president of the fan club, number one fan of all time. But Russell Westbrook hurts them in these late game situations because when he comes off the bench and he's trying to be the alpha Russ, that almost hurts them more than it helps them. Harden also can be playoff Harden. He can go right back to that. And he's had disastrous playoff exits in his past. So if I have to look at kind of the history, what history tells me, I think that the Mavs will still try to pull off this series. And maybe Paul George has something to say about that. Maybe he's going to be the deciding factor to help the Clippers push it to seven and maybe even win it.
Russ did have a +7 in 22 minutes on Sunday, and he was, second best in the plus-minus on the team. So
they're going to need that.
Even though he doesn't score as much as he used to, he still could play some defense, can't he?
He can. He's an effort guy. If he's getting rebounds, if he's helping out the team in other ways instead of trying to score, like when Russ is attempting three-pointers, just turn the TV off. Like, forget about it right there. But if he's out there trying to get offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, high intensity, I'm not saying drive to the hoop because sometimes it's a little reckless, but just keeping other guys involved, that's when Russ can be the better player.
Did you get a chance last night to see highlights of the B delay that was going on in Phoenix?
That was crazy, man. I when's the last time we had a B delay in a baseball game?
It's been a while. Like, I've never seen just a hive form right there behind the screen. I would like to know, how quickly did that form? Was that something that's been brewing for a while, then they just noticed it? Or was that something that just happened in a matter of hours?
Hey, that's a great point. And it's indoors, right? Like, how does this happen indoors? Are we missing something here?
Well, maybe it's possible that the roof was open. Or no, I mean, it's got to be hot in Arizona right now. I don't know how it formed. That's a great question. I have no idea.
It's a wrong terminology, but for the lack of better terminology, the vacuum that the beekeeper used. I could watch footage of that for the rest of the show, Steve. That was very fascinating to watch them just like basically suck off all the, the different bees that were forming that hive or forming that nest. It was crazy. The vacuum that was taking all those bees away.
Yeah. And by the way, something else that was really interesting, the guy that ended the bee delay, he actually threw out the first pitch. Can you imagine that game was delayed for 2 hours last night?
Really?
2 hours with that bee delay.
Man, and I love the crowd response. Like, whenever they zoomed in to the beekeeper, like, taking the bees away, the crowd was going crazy. The Jumbotron was playing funny music, mm-hmm. like hero music and stuff like that. Bizarre yep. moment yesterday.
His name is Matt Hilton. And yes, he became famous overnight for handling this bee delay.
Hero of the day, Matt Hilton is his name, and he has lived it up. They were chanting MVP. They were playing I Need a Hero, and he was that hero. He got the place clear. And just a moment ago, he threw out the ceremonial first pitch. They just announced that he's going to be available for interviews in the press box at 8:45. Matt Hilton, 37-year-old, father of four, movie star, good looks, now a superstar.
That's awesome. That is great stuff. And by the way, I saw that vacuum he was using. Oh, my God. First, you know what he did, right? He sprayed them with like a stunner. And that was it. Like, they couldn't go anywhere, that they were stunned. And then he just started, vacuuming them up.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. I thought that, and even the players were interviewed on it. They said it was cool to watch it being disassembled. I think that the bees who got out there, and the fact that he actually did that, does every baseball stadium have like a, not necessarily a beekeeper, but somebody who is like an animal control specialist?
There is no way. There is absolutely no way.
How do they get this done that quickly?
Maybe they've got, I don't know.
Maybe their groundskeepers are certified in stuff like this. I have no clue.
So I know Matt Hilton does not work for the team.
Okay.
But, the great question is, how do you get him on such short notice to come to the ballpark and handle a bee delay?
I know, man. I can't even. I don't understand this one right here. What do you do if this happens at an outdoor, stadium?
Yep.
And I mean, for a fan's sake, if you're right there, if you're scared of bees, you're not going in your seat.
Heck no, not even close.
Are you a bee guy? Are you scared of bees?
I'm not a big fan of bees. I don't want to get stung by one because I'll probably get.
Have you ever been stung?
As far as I know, no. My wife was stung and she had a bad reaction.
It's
really
painful.
Bad reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not just the stinger, but then what if your arm or whatever starts to swell up?
Yeah,
then
and you're
what?
Starting to get a rash
and stuff
like
terrible.
That. No way.
No. All right. By the way, a rash, not to be confused with a rash Markazi, but yes, the rash from getting stung. I understand that. All right. 17 passed as we continue. We'll come back next. We'll do a little fantasy sports with Jeff. But first, Charlie One with traffic. It's the hour. All right, we got more coming up here, including fantasy with Jeff Erickson from RotoWire. I already see one question in the hopper. You want to send it to us on Twitter and X at 600ESPN El Paso. Follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff_Erickson, who joins us from RotoWire.com, your one-stop fantasy shop for all your fantasy sports. Jeff, how are you?
Doing well. Personally doing well, but my sports interest in the last like 24 hours, not so great, but that's all right. It happens there. Pacers, Reds, fantasy teams, you name it, seemingly on a downswing, but that's okay.
What would you say the percentage of injured players on all of your fantasy rosters are right now?
Oh, I mean, it kind of, sometimes, it varies. Like, I have one team where I'm like, I'm stashing, you know, no IR spots, seven reserve spots, and I think four of them are stashes, which is just a killer. You know, holding on to like Royce Lewis, Luis Robert, Paul Skeens, waiting for that call up there. You know, it gets really tricky, you know, kind of navigating that. So it gets frustrating. Others, like, I haven't had to major ones. Like, NFBC main event, I'm having a good year but a bad week. But Justin Steele's, like, my one major injury there. Other than that, I've kind of avoided the whammy so far.
Wow. That's good. That's really, really good. Good for you.
Actually, Lane Thomas this week, too. I take that back. I did lose him. But that's okay.
Lane's not off to the kind of start I was expecting this year.
No, but 11 steals will help pay a lot of bills.
Yes, it will.
So even though he's not hitting for power or hitting for average, you know, he does something. At least he did something. So at least I could kind of, you know, justify it a little bit there. So, and the thing is, we'll get him back at some point, but we'll see. We'll see if I can hold on to him long enough there when we get more of a prognosis on him.
Bryce Turang is another one who's stealing a lot of bases early.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And hitting for average, too.
Yes, he is.
And that's one thing where that's been at a position, second base, which frankly has been pretty tough to find good production from. So I've been impressed with what he's done so far.
All right. Are you familiar with the 999 challenge?
No, I am not.
All right. By the way, Adrian, what's the backstory on this 999 challenge?
No.
How did it originate?
Yeah, I think it was just like a social media thing, and then it became very popularized after that. So I think that's the origins. Just like most things, it was a trend on social media. People were wondering, is this possible? And then that's what ended up happening.
Break it down
for
Jeff.
Tell me more. What is it?
Break it down for Jeff.
So 9 beers, 9 hot dogs over 9 innings, Jeff.
Maybe 25-year-old Jeff could pull that off. 53-year-old Jeff, not so much.
If 25-year-old Jeff was pulling this off, what would be the bigger challenge? The 9 beers over the 9 innings or the 9 hot dogs?
Probably the hot dogs.
I think so, too.
I don't know. A little column A, a little column B. I've never... You know, I've always been a little bit of a lightweight on that sort of stuff there. That's the thing. And my big problem is I'm a beer snob a little bit there, too. So I would, you know, I think to pull that off successfully, you have to get something that's pretty lightweight.
You would, or that. Pilsner or something like that. That's just an easy drinking beer. I agree with that.
Yeah.
By the way, since we're talking about the 999 challenge and kind of how it used to be, did you see what happened yesterday in Citi Field with those dollar hot dogs for the Met game?
I can imagine a result that could happen. No, I didn't see it. Did they end up on the field?
Yeah, fans started throwing like 100 hot dogs in the ninth inning, and they were just flying everywhere. So eventually, fans were getting escorted out.
I could believe that. It seems. I remember the old Chicago White Sox disco demolition night, how that went over so well, and the nickel beer night or quarter beer, whatever it was, that ended up poorly. All Bill Veeck productions there.
Fantastic. Meanwhile, this comes in from Neff Poppy. For Jeff, he tweets us, time to bench Goldie. Talking about Paul Goldschmidt.
Probably not, in part because you're unlikely to find a better alternative. And also, I just think that I know he's been super frustrating, and he's coming off of a year that is relatively disappointing, but I don't think his skills are completely away. I don't think he's gone Jose Abreu on us yet.
Oh, God, that poor. I mean, I talked about that with Jaffe last hour. I mean, can you remember a collapse in the first month of the season that is as monumental as this? He brought up Chris Davis, but I mean, Davis has been struggling for average most of his career. You know, if you think about what happened with Abreu last season, he did come back and finish strong with the Astros and had 18 home runs, 90 RBIs. When was the last time you saw somebody go from that to this?
Well, just remember what he did the first month of last season. It was pretty darn bad.
Yep.
In fact, I got to pull that up because I'm intrigued now. I got to see if my recollection's right about just the extent of his struggles. But I know he was pretty darn awful in the first half last year.
He was.
First month last year, he hit 235, 267, 270. He had no homers. He had 4 doubles. He struck out 27 times versus 4 walks. So he was pretty awful last year over that stretch, too. So,
well.
Yeah, It is a collapse, though. I mean, I didn't expect a total, utter collapse that he had. I thought, you know, you see a gentle downswing, and that's unfortunately we didn't get that. Sometimes players just crater.
Yeah, that's true. All right, second question from Nev Papa. He has three for us. What is up with Freddie Freeman?
You know, I think this is just normal, probably ebbs and flows of a season for him. But yeah, this is something that's not he's not, you know, he's still hitting .302 on the season. He's just not having he's got this home run drought here. You know, hit one against Toronto on Sunday at least, but honestly, I don't feel like this is a big problem for him. He's got 23 walks against 25 strikeouts.
Yeah.
I don't think we're talking about anything major here. The exit velocity is down a little bit. I think that is a little bit of concern. Barrel rate is definitely down. I think he'll be all right. It is interesting, though, to notice that there is a little bit of a trend that his average exit velocity was 90 miles an hour last year, and 2022 is 91.3, 88.6 so far this year. So that's definitely down. I think as the weather heats up, he'll get better, but it's definitely been frustrating so far. It's a lot of first base slumpers. You know, Matt Olson's having a really awful start to the season too. Spent a lot of time talking Corbin Carroll, but not much time talking Matt Olson.
No, that's a good point, and you're right. Olson's another one who's struggling. Last question from Poppy: what's up with the early season rash of pitchers on the IL?
Boy, oh boy. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez today, every day it's a new name. I think it's there's multiple fathers to this here. One, just it's pitching. You know, we have not found a way to keep pitchers healthy. I think you and I have kind of riffed on that before. Velocity, the chase for more velocity and movement, I think it creates an issue. I think if you look at it there, that's the harder you throw, the more likely you are to get hurt. And I think that's been forever true. And I do think the pitch clock does not help. I think the lack of rest between pitches is probably something, especially pitchers who have been conditioned to get that rest between pitches, you know, taking that away from them is probably not a good thing. You know, when Tyler Glasnow talked about them cracking down on the sticky stuff a couple of years ago and the way they did it so abruptly, you know, at the start of the season, it created problems. Because some pitchers, you know, had to try to grip it harder or grip it a different way, and that led to some issues for some pitchers. I think the same thing is probably true with the pitch clock, too. You're used to doing things a certain way, and the arm doesn't recover, and when you're already expending max effort to begin with, that's probably a problem.
Yeah. More with Jeff as we keep things moving here on the show. Plus, we've got a question on the app from Robert, which we'll ask in a moment, but let's get a SportsCenter update here as we hit the bottom of the hour. That Jeff Erickson from rotowire.com, your one-stop shop for fantasy sports. Robert gets in on the app and says, "Hi, I'm a huge Reds fan. Do you mind asking Jeff how he thinks the Reds will do this year in terms of the playoffs?"
Well, they're going to have to battle to get there still. I don't think it's a given that our Reds make it. He knows that I hope you know I'm a Reds fan as well. If not, well, hey, plenty of room aboard the bandwagon. Another loss today at San Diego. Tough road trip right now. And I think the depth on this team has been kind of really worn down, and that's been a problem for this team. 16-15 now. Still plus 18 run differential, but I think the Reds are a starting pitcher short right now in terms of quality. Losing Frankie Montas hurts a lot. And I think that, you know, losing McClain, losing T.J. Friedel, you know, Encarnacion Strand is hurt right now. Having Nuelve Marte get suspended, I mean, all that depth that they had is really kind of really whittled down their chances. And I feel like they've always been going for, like, the safe, cheaper free agents. I think they need to add a major player at the trade deadline. We'll see if they can pull it off.
How do we keep Mike Trout healthy?
I don't think there's an answer to that right now. Angels certainly haven't found it. I don't know what their training regimen is. I don't know what Trout's is. I don't know if they are working well together or not. There's some unknowns in those, you know, unknown variables in that equation. But boy, oh boy, I mean, they've tried. They put him in bubble wrap a lot. I mean, maybe you just have him DH, but that takes away some of his value as a real life player. I don't know. I don't know. It was devastating to see that news come down yesterday. Steve, I got a story for you on that. I'm in a dynasty league, the one league where I have Trout, and I'm a rebuilding team, yet I bought Trout at the auction hoping to get a discount and being able to turn him into something as a better long-term asset, and I was 10 minutes away from pulling the trigger on a deal when the news came down.
Oh, my God. Were you really?
Yeah. So shame on me because my trade partner initiated talks like a week and a half ago, and you know, I'm juggling a lot of balls in the air. I didn't prioritize getting that done quicker. And here we are. I'm left with nothing now on that. So shame on me for that. But I'm just bummed out because, you know, I love Mike Trout. I think he's an awesome player to watch, and baseball needs to see him on a good team. He wasn't going to – and that's the problem, too, is the Angels were already circling down the drain even before this injury happened. It's one of the sadder stories in baseball that he's only played 3 playoff games and doesn't appear to be playing it in any anytime soon.
What would you have received in that trade that you were late to the party on?
Well, Hagen Smith is a college pitcher that we go that deep in this league. It would have been part of the highlight of that deal there. Would have gotten like a first round draft pick in our March supplemental draft. And then probably like Trey Lipscomb would have been a different part. It's an interesting league because anybody that's a minor leaguer or in this case college pitcher, that you hold them for free until they become major leaguers.
Wow.
And then they only advance at $3 per year. Anybody else major leaguer wise that you acquire advances $5 a year. So you can see how it adds up pretty quick. You get a really good plus 3 player. You keep them for 10 years.
Are high school players eligible or just college?
Anybody's eligible. We get people in the March, and you can only do that in our March supplemental draft. Is the only time you can acquire those guys.
Okay.
Otherwise, you can only acquire major leaguers in both in the auction and in our monthly supplementals. But you can take high school players. You can take people take Japanese players before they come over all the time. It's hardcore.
That's good.
We have 40-man rosters, so it's a fun league. It's called XFL, and it's a kind of a hybrid because you can only keep 15 players. So, sure, go ahead and take that high school player, but that's one of your 15 keeps. And it does, you know, it doesn't matter whether they're a prospect or a major leaguer. You get 15, period. So if you're on the cycle of contending, you can't afford to keep a player like that. But if you are on the cycle of rebuilding, well, okay, that's fine. You have the benefit of time, but the farther out you get them, the less likely they are, the less certain they are to kind of cash in.
Were guys like Shohei and Yamamoto on those 15-man lists?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yamamoto was picked 3 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Shohei, I'm not sure, actually. That's a good question. That was so long ago that I'm trying to remember. I think it was probably 1 year before. But I also think, too, our attitude towards players from Japan have changed, too.
Yep.
Now we're more willing to believe in the standouts that they are really truly that good, and so especially on the pitching side of things.
I agree with you. All right, takeaways on the NFL draft. What do you think?
Okay, in the non-Atlanta portion of our draft analysis here,
yes,
because they deserve special mention. But it was interesting to see how skill position wise, how heavily slanted was in favor of wide receivers and quarterbacks. Great year for them. Just a reminder that they come in cycles. Next year will be a better running back class than it was this year. Only 4 running backs the first 2 days, the first 3 rounds of the draft. And not even a ton on day 3 either. It was very light in running backs, so not as much immediate help there. It's a big year of transition for teams. So many head coaches, coordinators have changed too. So there's going to be a lot of things that are up in the air this year. I think it's going to be one of the air bars in our fantasy drafts are going to be much wider than they usually are.
Jeff, when it comes to the running back spot, I think last year you saw 2 running backs taken in the first round. This year, running backs felt like forgotten in the NFL draft. It's kind of a reflection of where the running back market really is in this league.
Yeah. Well, and you had a team like the Dallas Cowboys who everybody thought might be the first to take a running back, not take one at all. That to me was interesting. They said, okay, we're just going to recycle Zeke here. Royce Freeman, come on down. We'll go that Rico Dowdle. He's fine by me. They're going to go with that 3-headed monster with a revamped offensive line. They had a lot of things they wanted to fix, so they went that way. I think it does reflect, though, the league's perception about running backs. Although I think a lot of we saw more free agent, you know, NFL, like veteran free agents get paid this offseason we had in normal years. Maybe not to the extent that they were getting before, but at least they were getting contracts. So it's an interesting transition year for the position, that's for sure.
You have so much content from the NFL draft. Like, if you want to just go behind the paywall and try it out, this is a great week to do it. I mean, you've got NFL Dynasty biggest winners and losers from the draft. You've got fantasy impact of offseason moves. You've got veteran winners and losers, which Jim Coventry profiled. You've got everyday recaps with draft grades and fantasy analysis. My God, this is like the perfect time if you want to get a sneak peek on perhaps who to draft for 2024.
Absolutely, and we realize that the NFL cycle is 365 now. That, you know, Best Ball Mania has already started on Underdog, for instance. There, it's never too soon. The draft cycle is pretty crazy.
It really is. But again, it's all up right now at rotowire.com. Again, folks, you can do it without even putting down a credit card. All the football, all the baseball, all the fantasy, everything you need, it's right there for you. Jeff, terrific stuff as always. Thanks for the conversation, and we'll look forward to doing it again with you right back here next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Adrian. Appreciate you guys.
Excellent work as Jeff Erickson takes us through 20 in front of 6 right now as Sports Talk continues. We've got more coming up in a moment. Stay with us at 600 ESPN El Paso. Tim Haggerty is going to join us. I joined Tim yesterday. I had so much fun with Tim. I really did. The police showed up. I mean, that's exactly what you would expect anytime I am at the ballpark with Hags. I mean, nothing like, a visit from security. And luckily, I started thinking, well, what if they would have, like, escorted me out and put me in cuffs and led me out? I'm thinking, as long as I can call my brother and make sure that he was taking my son back home after the game, I'll be all right. I could, you know, as long as he had the ride home, we're okay.
I thought you were going to say, as long as I didn't make it on FitFam, I'd be okay.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's true, too. Listen, I mean, I've only been on FitFam once, and it was because of the video I shot.
It was a good thing, yeah.
It was. It was a very good thing. It was a video I shot of the great, Andy Reid. That's one site I'm like, you know what? Please, I want to stay off of that site. And if I'm ever going to be on FitFam, be on there for the right reasons, right?
Correct. Yeah, you want to be there for the right reasons, not all the stuff that gets shared around and gets a lot of views.
I agree with you. Hey, did Zay already leave or is
no,
he still
Zay's
here?
Still here, yes.
Mic him up. I want to hear what he's hearing right now as far as UTEP, the portal, the movement around the portal and ultimately what we could be experiencing here in the next few days. Zay, welcome back. What are your thoughts on all the action going on in the portal right now for UTEP?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? Because we don't know, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. But, you know, we do know that, hey, these players, they had a plan this year. They had a plan, and now they're in the portal. And we'll see how that turns out. You know, honestly, I didn't think, you know, a lot of these guys who are hitting the portal were going to see the field anyways. But you never know, right? You never know if you're going to need that depth, you know, later on in the season, injuries hit, and now you're short, you know, a cornerback or a safety, stuff like that. So, you know, the portal, it's a tough business.
You following all this drama with Xavier Smith in Colorado?
Oh, yeah. I think I was the first one on it. I mean, I read the Athletic article, and, you know, I was searching for Xavier Smith because I knew he was a Colorado transfer. And,
yeah,
you know, it just so happened that he's the front line. He's the headliner of this whole thing.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? What's your takeaway after reading the article and kind of following all this back and forth stuff?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, these exit meetings, I think they happen, like, almost anywhere, right? This is bound to happen now in this day of college football, college athletics as a whole. But I think they probably could have gone about it in a more compassionate way, like he said, right? You at least want the head coach in that exit meeting. You don't want to just sit him down with the position coaches or stuff like that. I think it's just, you know, it's unprofessional.
Yeah, it's true. But now it'll be interesting because Xavier Smith's going to be a minor and all eyes are going to be on him this season to see if he is able to kind of back up and keep doing what he did last year at Austin Peay.
Yeah, I mean, an FCS freshman All-American, and now he's looking to, you know, bring that over to UTEP, right? He's a really good – he's an athlete, right? He was recruited to Colorado, I think, to play offense, quarterback. Mm-hmm. He made the switch to DB, and, you know, he's barely learning the position too, right? The sky's the limit with the guy like that.
Yeah, it's so true. What are you hearing about basketball?
Not much. I mean, you know, it's a quiet time for basketball. I think it'll be a quiet time for a lot of teams, and, you know, teams are starting to finalize their roster. UTEP, obviously, still has a couple scholarships available. We'll see where they go with that.
Yeah, they do. And by the way, I'm also interested to see what happens, you know, with the kid that was here, then he went to East Carolina, the former Tarleton State guard, if he ends up a minor.
Yeah, you'd expect him to make a decision soon, right? He's taken most of his visits, and you know, guys like that, you gotta get your spot quickly because spots are gonna start filling up. Teams are, like I said, finalizing their roster, so I'd expect a decision out of him pretty soon.
Is that his name, Tristan Barnes?
Devin Barnes.
Devin Barnes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Devin Barnes.
So Devin Barnes, just one other nugget to add to him. You mentioned the East Carolina visit; that's huge, right there. UTEP's gotta land him, and the NBA guys are off right now to get evaluated, get tested. Some of them might come back. Vladislav Golden, who played against the Miners when he was at Florida Atlantic. He just announced that he's coming back to college basketball. He'll be joining Dusty May out of Michigan. So these names are starting to trickle back into college basketball. And as they do, roster spots are going to fill up. And UTEP's got to get Devin Barnes if they really want to, you know, contend next year like they hope to.
I think the dead period starts either today or tomorrow for college basketball.
I think that's correct. Yeah, the portal closes, and now the only time, or the time when it'll officially reopen, is when all the players who hit the draft and who wanted to test the draft waters end up coming back.
Yeah, that's so true. All right, good job, Zay. Have fun at the concert tonight. I never realized, you know, you're a headbanger. You're gonna have some fun at this show.
Yeah, this is my first ever concert. I've never been to a concert before, so what a way to start.
You're joking, right?
No, this is really my first.
This is your
ever
first
concert.
Show.
Yeah. You know, I saw the opportunity, free tickets. I was like, you know what?
There you go.
I'm just going to do it.
Nice. I like that. Adrian, any advice for his first concert?
Advice is don't go home with a stranger out there who says, hey, let's, you know, we're moshing over here. Come back home. Y'all, no. None of that after party. None of that stuff. Also, the other advice is don't get involved in the mosh. You never know who could be involved in there.
That's true. Do you have earplugs just in case?
I do.
Good. All right. Listen to the background.
Everybody's ready. Everybody's fired up for Zay.
Is Alberto going tonight too? Is he also going with him?
Yeah, I got a couple of tickets. I might be making my way over as well.
Good. Well, you know what? You guys have a blast out there. We'll get a full review, a full concert review from all of you here tomorrow or the rest of the week, okay? So that's good. Enjoy the show, guys. Enjoy the show. We've got 30 minutes left. We're enjoying the show. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso.
Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, we got about a little less than 30 minutes to go before Tim Haggerty takes over the airwaves with Chihuahuas baseball. Game 2 of a 6-game set against the Space Cowboys. Fun game last night. Chihuahuas hung on. Wasn't easy, Adrian. 8-6 the final score. But they were able to make it happen.
Back and forth, seems like.
Yeah, that's the way it was. J.P. France got knocked out in the fourth, but you know what? It's just a fun, entertaining baseball game. One of the best nights for baseball. Last night was just absolutely gorgeous at the ballpark. It was like the perfect night to go watch a game.
Yeah, weather's been great outside. Whether you're going outside to golf or, you know, you're going out to a baseball game or you're just going out in the city of El Paso, like during the week without the wind, it's just beautiful outside here in El Paso right now.
Yeah, it really is. So once again, if you're heading out tonight, enjoy yourselves. Have a good time. And, you know, let's hope the Chihuahuas make it to 2 in a row. As we continue here. By the way, I know you mentioned this during SportsCenter. Not looking good early for the Heat. They've got a lot of work to do to try to come back into this one. Boston looking like they're ready to do what the Knicks couldn't do last night, and let's wrap this up.
Yeah, and I feel like for the Celtics, no surprise right here. It's a surprise to me that it's even went 5. I thought it would be a sweep, a clean sweep for the Celtics. They lost the game 2 at home. A little bit of lucky shooting from the Miami Heat. And in this one, they're just so depleted. No Jaime Jaquez in this one. No Terry Rozier. I just, you know, there was no surprise here. This would be all Celtics.
Yeah, and now the only question is going to be the late game, and can the Clippers make it two in a row without Kawhi?
You know, one of the things that I'm worried about is the aftermath of either of these teams after this series, right? Like, whoever loses, what's next for both these teams? Because there's a case to be made that the Mavericks have a little bit of, you know, turmoil after this postseason run. If they don't have a deep run into the postseason, they went, you know, all in at the trade deadline to get P.J. Washington traded, their first-round pick for this year's draft to get him. Kyrie was the guy they elected to re-sign over the offseason. So, Luka, he's going to probably grow a little impatient if they don't get out of this first-round series with a victory and move on. And then on the flip side with the Clippers, they're opening a new arena. They're not going to be at Crypto.com or Staples, whatever you want to call it anymore. They have their own arena that opens up next year. How many fans are actually going to be there to watch this team? I mean, the Kawhi Leonard saga has never really been solved. Never really is healthy. This is the first season he plays 70-plus games for the Clippers, and then he's injured in the postseason? And then you got Russell Westbrook and, you know, question marks there, and Harden's your marquee guy that you're trying to sell jerseys with? No.
What's Kawhi's legacy going to be like when he wraps up his career? Is he going to be another one of these what-if guys?
But he also won two finals MVPs, right?
So he's a Hall of Famer now anyway, regardless, right?
Hall of Famer, but also still, like, bizarre, like, just kind of a really weird run.
Like an asterisk Hall of Famer.
Asterisk Hall of Famer. I like that because, you know, the 2019 season when he beat Toronto, remember, the Raptors went up against the Warriors who didn't have KD in that last run. He ended up, rupturing his Achilles or whatever it was at that time. So, yeah, I feel like that I give him a lot of a lot of props for those two finals, especially with the Spurs. Love that run. He was the best player in the world in 2019, no doubt about it. But I very puzzling career for Kawhi Leonard.
Can you imagine if Hall of Famers had asterisks next to their name? How weird that would be.
Right.
Like, you're in the Hall of Fame, but...
Right, but all this stuff. And he's somebody who definitely has a butt. But also, I would say that the NBA Hall of Fame is pretty tarnished. I mean, it feels like everybody can get in. If, like, Rudy Gobert is on track and on pace to get in the Hall of Fame, then there's definitely something wrong with the quality.
Yeah, I know. 505-6009, that is our telephone number as we continue here on Sports Talk. By the way, Big 12 is meeting in Scottsdale. Tough life. They're really that's their meeting spot this year. And apparently all the rage right now, and I saw this story on CBSSports.com. In fact, it's a good read from Brandon Marcello. They're ready to expand the NCAA basketball tournament from 68 to 76 teams. They've even talked about as many as 80 teams in the college basketball tournament. And my question is, when is enough enough? Like, to me, 68's enough. I was happy with 64. I didn't even feel like we needed play-in games or the first four like we have. And now they're talking about expanding by another 8 to potentially 12 schools and just keep growing this thing. Like, God, doesn't it seem, and I don't want to say it's watering the tournament down because it's not, but you know who's going to benefit off of this? The power schools are going to benefit, not the smaller schools.
I was told by a Division I coach, their argument on this is, well, if bowl games can include teams that have a 6-6 and 7-5 record, well, why can't college basketball be more inclusive to the teams that deserve a postseason chance? What would you say to that, right? Because I don't agree with it.
But what does that even mean, teams that deserve a postseason chance? Does that mean that they're regular season champs and they lose in their conference tournament?
Again, yeah, it's subjective, right? It's case to case.
Yeah. I mean, you play 12 games in football. You play 30-plus in college basketball.
And also, let's talk about where the money goes, right? Money's at football still.
And there's like 132 teams in football. There's like 300-plus in college basketball.
I'm not a fan of expanding the college basketball tournament. If you're going to have more postseason tournaments, if you're going to allow more, you know, NITs or CBIs and CITs and stuff like that, cool with that. Not cool with expanding this tournament beyond that. I get where the Division I coach was coming from when they said that, to just allow more of a recognition. But at the same time, if we're talking about mid-majors and lower major schools or conferences, it's the conference champ. That's it. No two-bid league. I don't want to have this discussion about conferences like Conference USA having more than one.
I don't either. I feel like it's, again, watering things down in a big way. And it's not even just Conference USA. It's a lot of leagues we're talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
But again, I don't need a 10th Power 5 or high major school getting in either. Let's make sure we address that issue, because to me, when you're expanding it, I don't see this benefiting the smaller programs and the mid-majors. I think this is just going to benefit. Look, why does the Big 12 want it? Not because another Conference USA school is going to get into the tournament, but maybe now another Big 12 school will get in, or a Big 10, or a Pac-12, or not Pac-2, Pac-2. I mean, that's what we're talking about here.
Right, it's the bottom barrel teams who you're like, oh, you know, are they on the bubble? No, let's just get them in. Like, you know, just forget about wondering whether or not they should make it. Just get them in. And you're right, the teams who are going to reap the benefits. It's just like the college football playoff, right? When you first saw it come out, everybody thought, oh, yeah, Wow, this is great. It's like all the at-large. No. It's the conference champions who get the automatic bid. They're going to give more preference to the teams out of the Power Four, and the Group of Five will have a representative.
Enrique, listening to the show, gets in on Twitter and X. I agree with Cap. There's no need to expand NCAA men's basketball tournament. It's just an excuse for a cash grab to benefit Power 5 schools and potentially water down the quality of the NIT.
And if they do it, I mean, it will water down the talent. It'll water down all the kind of teams who will get out there. And for the mid-major schools that could end up getting an opportunity, it just doesn't feel like it's valid. We talked about asterisks just previously. That's a big-time asterisk.
When are they going to put them all in? I mean, that's just – wasn't that once a request? Was it Patino who said that every school, or Calipari, that they should all go in?
I remembered something like that. Yeah, definitely. It seems kind of ridiculous to do stuff like that. If you don't have a good record, if you don't have a good season, then it's the end. Like, move on to the next season, you know? That's what sports are about.
100%. All right, 12 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. Let's get one last traffic update. Charlie's back, and then we'll go to Tim. We'll get his thoughts on last night and how a police officer walked into his booth during the game. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso.